Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission each week is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs and business people that I can find who are excited to really freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice with us each week. And today I am really excited. I'm bouncing in my chair. I get to welcome somebody that I have followed around on the internet for longer than I would like to say. It's been a long time. And that is Ken MacArthur. Ken, welcome to the show. I will introduce you in just a bit, but I want to make sure you're here. I know you were having trouble getting in.
I am here. It's so great to be here.
We were doing this Facebook back and forth, and I was going, oh, no, oh, well, I said a couple of bad words, but oh, no is the most one that I said, no, no, no. So, I am so excited to talk with you today, and I was like, no, this can't be happening.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, thank you. Listen, I had this whole thing that I was going to introduce you, but the thing is they can read it on your website. They can read it on the show intro, and I've got so many questions, and you have so much to share. Would you be terribly offended if I just skip that part?
That sounds great.
Okay, good. Well, listen, before we dive into all of the questions that I have and everything that you have to share, can you tell people, you know, since I didn't do it, since I'm not doing my job, can you do it for me and tell people who you are and where they can find you, and then we'll dive in.
Wow. Well, there's no short story about who I am and what I've done because I've been around since the dark ages of the internet. I've been lucky enough to be in at the very, very start and have done some wonderful, exciting things. You know, I've started during the dot-com boom and had some wonderful success stories creating joint ventures and then a series of events and products and a book and all kinds of exciting things. And people can find out all about me or more than they ever wanted to know if they just do a search on Ken MacArthur on Google or something like that, or they can go to KenMacArthur.com. Long story short, been around a long time, done a lot of things, had a lot of fun.
I know. I've been following you around, like you said, since the dark ages. But, to be perfectly honest, I'm one of those people who had a computer before there was internet.
Yep.
So I'm right there with you. I mean, I knew. Do you ever have this thing you just know in your gut that something is going to work for you? And I knew when I bought this $3,000 boat anchor that somehow, someday, I was going to make a living on something that didn't exist yet, but I was going to do it with a computer. And you know, once internet came along, I started following you, and I followed Jim Palmer, the newsletter guru, and Joel Kalm.
Yeah.
And you three were, I mean, I was constantly reading everything that you guys had to put out, so I am so excited to meet you.
Well, it's so great to be here. I've really been fortunate, you know, for a long, long time, and we've got a big celebration coming up of over a decade online with the JV Alert Live family, and I've been around much longer than that. And you know, I tell people when I started out, it's a good thing they didn't ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up because the internet didn't exist.
Right. I think when they built it, it was like, oh, that's for me. It's mine.
I was just reading a book that was written by James Michener, which you probably don't remember because you're much too young.
I do.
James Michener,
no,
but,
I read everything. I have over 3,000 books.
Wow. Well, James Michener was writing in the 90s about what it was like to be a novelist, you know, and mm-hmm. he wrote this this book, and he's describing how the publishing industry was changing in 1990 and how they could miraculously, you know, put his words into a word processor and then dial up on the phone and get it to the publisher. and he was envisioning in that book back in 1990 that he didn't have any idea of how they would be publishing books, you know, in the future. And he talked about the idea that maybe at some point they'd be able to just write the words and the stuff would show up magically in our homes. And you know what? We're already there. We're having that fun right now.
We are. I mean, who could have thought some years ago that you could pick up the phone and have a face-to-face conversation?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, who would have thought? I mean, it's just astonishing how far we've come in really just a short decade or two. It's really amazing. And, of course, there's more to come. So you started out basically just, how did you start out? I would love to know the genesis of how you, I would love to know, how did you do this? I mean, you just got on the internet and went, you know, oh, there's Denise, but this, the rest of it's mine. So how did you do it?
Well, I started really, really young as an entrepreneur, so I guess it was in my blood, probably from my father. My father was a Presbyterian minister, actually, but I think he had a little bit of an entrepreneurial bug. He started as having his own bicycle shop in his garage when he was a little kid during the Depression, and he had that itch, and I think he kept it all along. Because when I was about 20 years old, I had a dream, and the dream was to own a fish store, if you can believe that. That came because I actually went one day down to the local tropical fish place, and I picked out this big black molly. And I picked it out because it was the biggest black molly in the tank. And I took that black molly home that night. And if you know anything about tropical fish, they actually, if you change the water and stuff like that, and that fish happens to be pregnant, the next morning what you get is a whole slew of little tiny squirmy black things going around in the tank. And so I saw like 50 babies that came out overnight, and I started doing the math. I said, maybe I paid 25 cents for that fish, and now I've got 50 of them. So I immediately went out. I bought a book. It was by Dr. Axelrod. I still remember the title of the book. And basically it was all about tropical fish, and it talked about how they imported them from all over the world into Tampa, Florida, which kind of happened to be the tropical fish capital of the world because they had just the right soil content to be able to create ponds and raise live bears there, and then they would add the exotic breeds from all over the world and ship them all over the United States to different pet stores and stuff like that. So actually, I moved down to Florida to go into the tropical fish business. And my dad saw a classified ad in the paper for a pet store for sale. And I actually, at age 21, by the time I was 21, I had a full-line pet store. I discovered the joys of owning your own business and the freedom that that brought and never looked back.
So a happy accident.
Yeah, absolutely. Or it was just in the blood. I don't know.
Probably a little bit of both, but the thing is that you saw an opportunity and you instantly acted on it, and I think that's where so many people have a disconnect between want and get.
Yeah. We all have opportunities all the time, countless opportunities. I love sitting on the aisles, on the window seat when I take off for my events and stuff like that, because I can look out the window and I can see the little ants kind of scurrying around as we take off.
Yeah.
And I think every person that I see down there is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to have a new relationship, to have a new friend, to have a new business, to have a potential customer, to influence somebody, to have an impact. And if we can do that in the smallest of ways, just with the people that we meet every day, you know, how can we use the art, the science, the technology that we have now, the powerful stuff that we've created over the last couple of decades, how can we use all that knowledge and experience to make that impact bigger and better?
Mm-hmm. And I love that description. It makes a lot of sense, because when I'm in the window seat looking down, my thought is just get us off the ground. Don't fall. Don't fall. I'm helping the pilot fly. I think I'm going to switch over to your way of thinking. So thank you for that. But you know, one of the things that happens, and I know it must happen with you, it happens with me all the time. Sometimes there are way too many opportunities. So how do you winnow through them?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, I think we have to stop. You know, we're so busy. We're so
yes.
I know I'm a busy person. I've got lots of things on my plate. Just the other day, I actually did a tally just to see, because I kind of had this feeling that I was getting myself in trouble. And I found out that I had 19 major projects on my plate, you know. Not little projects. Those are major projects that were sitting on my plate right now. And, you know, sometimes we just get overwhelmed with all the doing stuff that we don't think about how to get to the place that we actually want to be, you know. And I have two questions that I ask people when I first start working with them, if I'm working with them in a mentoring situation or like our masterminds that we put together, our one-day intensive events, for instance. When I ask them just two simple questions, and the first question is, what do you like to do when you get up in the morning? Which seems like a really basic kind of a question, but, you know, we can so oftentimes end up someplace that we don't want to be just because we don't ask ourselves that question. And I'll give you an example. I always use the example of my wife, and she loves to get out in the sun and work in the garden in the backyard. I get all kinds of fruits and vegetables. I'm so glad that spring's coming up from one standpoint, because she will be so happy getting out there and watching the things grow up and pulling the weeds and all that kind of stuff. For me, that would be torture, because the other side, the flip side of that is that she's going to want me to be out there in the backyard helping her to pull weeds and stuff like that. And my aching back and my hot, sweaty brow, you know, that's just not what I want to be doing, right? So every one of us has something that we like to do when we get up in the morning that would just make our day, that would make us so excited to get up, and we would just be craving to do that. And maybe it's standing up on the stage in front of thousands of people, or maybe it's hiding in a basement, never seeing another human being. You know, it just depends
that
on the individual person. Because we all have our skills and our desires and our wants, and it's a good thing that we do, because all of us are different, and all of us have different values and different ways that we can bring true value and solve real problems for people. But we need to ask that question, the first question, which is, what do you like to do when you get up in the morning? Because so many people say, you know, how can you make money online? And the question is, billions of ways, right? There's no end to the different ways that you can make money online. But the question that you really should be asking is, how can I get to do the things that I want to do every day and make that possible and give real value at the same time? And the second question I ask people to ask is, when you get to the end of your life, what will make you feel like you lived, you loved, and you made a difference? Because I figure if you get up every day, you're really eager to get to doing the things that you want to do, and you do that all day long, and then you get to the end of your life and you feel like you lived, you loved, and you made a difference, that's a pretty good life.
Very much so. But I can tell you what to do about your garden.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm like your wife. I dig holes all the time. It's my therapy. I'm always digging holes in my yard.
Yeah.
And I live in the deep south, so whatever you pick up and move is going to live. You can't kill it. It's just a given. But we actually had a real winter this year. I mean, real winter. We had snow and ice, and then we'd have it again, and we just don't have that. And my poor plants just went, you know, I can do three, but five is a bit much. I'm gone. So what I did is I put an ad in on Craigslist, and I tell them I want two starving college students. I will pay them $10 an hour, and I will feed them very well. And you know, it's the feeding them that gets them. They're like, "Where
yeah,
do they feed
that's
us?"
A good, that's a good plan. I like that.
My yard is very clean. It took 5 days and a couple of college students, but it's done. So there you go. That's my
There's
tip of the
plan.
Day. Yeah, yeah. Listen, you have so much going on. And let's go back to the 18 or 19 project. Did you say 19? I think I passed out when you said that. How do you manage it? Yeah, and how did you winnow through to just 19, I guess? I mean, since...
Well, you know, there are so many things in life that I want to do, you know, and I think there are a lot of people like that, that if you really get out there and you see all of the things that you can possibly do, you know, I've never been bored in my life. I swear there's always something I want to do. I might not be able to do some of the things that I want to do right now, but I've never been bored. And that's because, you know, I create a stockpile of things that I'd like to get around to sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's good for us to have a stockpile of ideas and a stockpile of things that we really want to do, because we can't do everything right now, right? But the truth is, if I'm working on 18 projects, and let's just say I'm working on one project, that one project at some point is going to get stalled. We're going to be waiting on something for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So then what I do is I move to the next project, and then I move to the next project. So every project doesn't get worked on all the time. But here's the important cravat to that, which is that you know, we all think we're great multitaskers, but none of us really are. So if you have say three ideas and each one of them would take you 30 days to get to the money, you'd be much better off if you could just focus on one project, get to the money. Because if you're focusing on three projects, it takes you at least 90 days to get to the money if there's no downtime between projects, you know? So the way that I've developed to really determine what's important is I ask a reiterative kind of a question. So I ask a question over and over and over again. And the question is, what is the one thing that I could do right now that would make everything else easier and faster and more efficient and more leveraged? So what's the one thing that I could do right now? And if I answer that question for me right now, the answer is cash flow. I could really use some cash coming in the door right now, right? So I have a rule right now that if I'm working on a project and I'm spending time on a project, that it has to generate immediate cash flow, because I know that cash flow will enable me to do all those other things that I want to be able to do. And if I'm working on things that don't generate cash flow, that I'll get distracted. I won't have the resources that I need. I'll be spending all my time thinking about, you know, where's the next dollar going to come from. So first step is that. And then you ask that question again. Well, what's the thing that will give me cash flow the fastest and make everything else easier? You know, and you think about those projects and those kinds of things. So that's kind of how I prioritize things. So whatever your real goal is, ask what's the thing that I can do right now that will make everything else that I want to achieve so much faster and easier.
And I'm sure you do an awful lot of outsourcing, because by managing your cash flow, you then have the resources to have other people do the things that you shouldn't be doing.
Boy, that's a hard learned question. I mean,
I know.
Ask that. You know, I did, for years and years, with a great deal of success, I did absolutely everything myself, you know. So I launched Affiliate Showcase, which went into the top 3,000 sites on the Internet. And it was me in my basement by myself, you know, basically doing everything. I didn't have anybody to help me. And I would get stuck sometimes for days on a problem just because I didn't really have any outside input. You know, sometimes we have what we call insights, and insights are things. I do an example at my events sometimes in a presentation that I do where I ask people for a particular insight. I put up a slide on the screen, and I ask them if they can see the one thing, if they can recognize something in that slide, and only about 1 in 100 people can see it. Only about 1 in 100 people. But as soon as that person tells the group, they all know, right? So
Right,
so that's
right.
The way insights are. Insights are things that are so much easier if we just have other people. So if you had 100 people that were helping you find the insights, you'd be much more likely to find it. Or you could search all your life trying to find that insight just by yourself, you know. So we do so much better, and we produce so much more in the way of results if we work with others, if we mm-hmm. combine together to help each other out. And that's the power of collaboration.
And that leads me, and listen, I mean, I was sitting here wincing as you were describing that because, boy, I did the same thing. When I first started out, you know, I'm a web developer and a virtual assistant, now an OBM, online business manager. And quite honestly, the internet was not what it was, what it is now. And of course, you know, talking with other, the ease of speaking with other people online just wasn't there. And it was just me. And yeah. I wore myself out. I mean, I really wore myself out. And fortunately, it worked. But, you know, because I was able to use a fair bit of common sense and business common yeah. sense. So it did work out. But it would have gone so much easier and faster had I been able to mastermind or mentor or coach with someone. And that leads me to my next question, because I was on your site, and you have a April 1st, you wrote this, I think, about paid masterminds. Do you mind talking about that? Because I would love to hear your thoughts on paid masterminds.
Well, I think when we're together, this has been true for thousands of years, you know. Whether you're living in biblical times or you're living as a caveman, when we come together, we have so much more that we can bring together. That's why we clump together in groups, you know, whether it was tribes back in the caveman times that came together to protect each other and to work together. If we can work together, we can achieve so much more. And the power of the mastermind is the power of putting, you know, one and one together and getting, you know, 11 instead of just addition. We're really leveraging people in powerful, powerful ways. So I've done all kinds of different masterminds, and I'm fascinated by the subject, you know. A guy by the name of Benjamin Franklin actually started out in the early times in 1700s, working with a couple of guys that they kind of picked. You know, he went down to the local bar and found out who was interesting and who had opinions, and he grabbed the bartender and he grabbed a cabinet maker and a couple of other interesting people, you know, a surveyor, and they had what they called a junto, which was basically a group that met every week, and they would each pick a topic, and they'd talk about those topics, whether they were moral topics or political topics or scientific topics, and they would just learn from each other, and they took the time to go into something that was important that they felt would be of real value to the group. Well, that group, working together, was able to do a number of things over the years. It was able to found the first lending library ever in the United States. It was able to develop an academy that eventually became the University of Pennsylvania. And, you know, masterminds have been around forever. It's the power of working together. And Andrew Carnegie, you know, famously was a huge proponent of masterminds and working together. And some of the industrial powers of the world were able to combine forces and change the face of the United States, you know, by working right. together. And Napoleon Hill, publicized those kinds of things.
Hill have a mental mastermind? I mean, he had an imaginary mastermind, wasn't that Napoleon Hill?
Where
he had Abraham Lincoln and several people who would come to him at night, and he would sit down and mastermind with dead people,
exactly,
and
it
was fascinating.
It is fascinating. And, you know, I talked about in the post that I made and in the podcast that I just finished up about, you know, the value of what we call a paid mastermind now, which mm-hmm. which is was the subject of that particular post. And that really has to do with investing in ourselves. You know, I have run mentoring programs, and I've run masterminds of all different varieties. And, you know, the truth is that I have a folder on my computer where I put all kinds of great materials, learning materials. I'll see something, and it'll be absolutely brilliant, and I will stuff it in that folder on my computer. Mm-hmm. And I could probably count on one hand over the last, you know, decade of the number of items that I put in that folder that I've actually gone back and opened up and read later, you know. We all have this stack of free e-books, or we have this all have this stack of free resources. Google is out there. We can learn about anything that we want to learn about. But when we invest in ourselves and we invest in a commitment to other people, you know, when you come mm-hmm. together as a mastermind and you're committed to be there and you're committed to show up, that's a different thing. I've had $10,000 mentoring programs that I've had, and people have come to me and said, look, I just can't afford, you know, that program. Will you scholarship me in? And on some occasions, mm-hmm. I've scholarshiped people into those programs. And unfortunately, the results are never the same, you know. And even though it's the same program, if you're paying out good money, you're going to pay attention and you're going to execute on that. If it's a significant commitment on your part, then you're going to learn something from that experience just because you've made an investment in yourself.
I agree. You see it all the time. I mean, you'll see kids that, you know, I've seen this in my own neighborhood. A little kid next door kept throwing his bicycle in the yard, in the driveway, and finally somebody ran over it. And do you know the next day he had a brand new bicycle?
Yeah.
I really wanted to smack the daddy. I really did. I didn't.
I mean, we don't value things. I mean, I remember my eldest daughter, you know, at the time we didn't really have a lot of money to send her off to college. And so she went out and she got a job and she worked really, really hard, you know, to be able to do that and to get back to school and to put her way through. And, you know, I'm so proud of her. She she got the highest grade point average at Temple University in her department and, mm-hmm. you know, did fantastic and has gone on to great success. And my youngest son, you know, had things a lot easier because I was able to save, you know, money for his college education and put that away. And sometimes, you know, the value is not there. The commitment is not there at the same level. If you're out there doing the work, you don't realize how much toil and trouble it took, you know, to make something like that happen. And maybe you don't value it as much, you know.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree. So can we switch to mentors? I know you've had a lot of mentors along the way. So can you explain to our audience the difference between a mentor and a mastermind?
Well, you know, there are a couple of different things. And a lot of this is about semantics. You know, how do we define things? And, you know, a full range of masterminds. I have groups that are called masterminds or they're called one-day intensives. For instance, my one-day intensive actually is designed to be small group mentoring, what I call small group mentoring. So we come together for a solid day and work together intensively on somebody's ideas, products or services, what roadblocks they've got, what opportunities they've got. We focus all on that particular person. That's kind of a combination of a mastermind and a mentoring situation. Mm-hmm. A mentoring situation is a guiding and teaching situation. You know, hopefully over a period of time, you know, we can't just make magically people succeed. we talk
Are
about
you sure?
turning points. Well, here's what we do get. You know, magical moments happen. You know, we have turning points in our life, and we go off in a completely different direction. So somebody can come to one of my live events, and they can hear somebody on the stage, or they can hear one insight, or they can be inspired by the people in the room, and they can make a choice. You know, I am changing my life now. I'm going in this direction now. And they set off in that new direction. But that doesn't mean the journey's ended, does it? You know, that's the start of the journey. And along the way, you know, we need mentors and we need encouragers. The path is not always easy. People think success goes straight to the top and that's it, right? You know, I've made it. I do all these building blocks. I do everything right. I learn everything that I can. And then I'm at the top and that's where I stay. But life isn't really like that. Life is a zigzag, you know. It's an up, it's a down. So we have moments of great, great success. And then after that, we may be totally broke. You know, I would say almost the majority of the millionaires that I know that have achieved massive success on some level have also been totally bankrupt, you know, at some point in their lives, and sometimes multiple times, you know. Look at Donald Trump. Yeah. You know, I have been on occasion richer than Donald Trump, you know. I remember the time that he was struggling after Casinos, you know, really died in Atlantic City, and he invested all that money there, and he owed more than I could possibly imagine making. And so I had more money than he did. But somehow he managed to get his money back, and I haven't gotten back quite that much money. So.
Oh, well, it's something to strive for.
Yeah, exactly.
And now, Ken, that leads me now to modeling success. I mean, I know it's very important to you. Trust me, I've been following you around for a long time. Why is it so important? I mean, who do you model yourself at? You don't have to tell me exactly who, but how do you go about finding people that you really want to model their success without copying them?
Well, that's a big thing.
So many people will just copy, and that's just wrong. I mean, that's just wrong on so many levels.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't think we can copy anybody else. You know, if you did an exact copy of somebody else, it would still be you. It'd still be different. Mm-hmm. So I don't worry so much about that. A lot of times people come to me with ideas and they say, Ken, I need you to sign a non-disclosure and a non-compete against my project before I tell you anything about it. And I say, you know what, I really don't do that because I want to leave my options open. Number one, I may think of the same idea that you thought of. And I don't want to, you know, be responsible for, you know, you thinking that maybe I stole that idea from you or something like that. But the other thing is that ideas are a dime a dozen, I think. You know, I've got more ideas than I could possibly execute in my lifetime. And, you know, the key is execution, you know, making it happen, you know. Two people can have exactly the same idea. One person will go out and make it into magic, and another person will make it into mud. So you have the choice of standing for excellence. So what I try to do is I try to model the things that I want to be, you know. So when I see somebody who's honest and upstanding and who has real candor and who has real quality and delivers real value, then I say, I want to be like that, you know, and maybe I'm not like that right now. Maybe I don't have that person's resources or that person's talents. But the truth is we can develop talents. We can develop knowledge. We don't have to be stuck wherever we are right now. We can think of our success in terms of what we want to be, not necessarily what we are at this moment. So if I were, you know, in a prison right now and I was down on my luck and everything about my life had been negative and everybody had piled down on me for years and years, I can make a choice now at this point in my life to go forward, to move forward, to be somebody else. Even if I've done things that are horrible in the past, I can choose right now to be the best possible person that I can be from this point forward.
You know, I read a book recently called E Squared by Pam Grout, and she said something in that book that really grabbed me, and it's you know, you read something by, you know, somebody says something that you already knew, you just hadn't articulated it to yourself.
Yep.
Yeah, you see it all the time, and that's why I think people should read. I mean, I love to read, but, and I'm paraphrasing this thing, but she said basically every thought is a prayer.
Yep.
So every time you're thinking a thought, and she's not talking about God or, you know, not necessarily, because you can be, a prayer can be to yourself, it can be to your subconscious, it can be to God, it can be to an astronaut for all you know. But it's basically, you know, every thought is, it's almost a living, breathing entity. So you have to be careful what you're thinking. And I agree with that. And any time I'm stuck in a loop and I'm having what I call stinking thinking, I'll make it stop. You know, you have to make it stop. So I love what you're saying about make the decision right now to have different thoughts, create different character mores, create, you know, different steps in your life, and it can be done at any moment.
Yeah,
and
we're,
I truly
we're creatures,
believe that.
Yeah, we're creatures of habit, and we do things over and over and over again, and sometimes we get stuck in a rut, but we can choose starting today to create a new habit. And how do you do that? How do you become a good person? If you want to be a good person and you think you're a bad person, well, it's pretty simple. You go out and you do good things, right?
Right.
So if we want to become a success, then what we do is we create small successes. You know, whatever the smallest piece that we can start with to have success so that we can know that we can be successful, so we can feel it in our bones, so that we can dream and achieve and go forward in a way that allows us to have more and more success. And when we don't have that success, to be able to dream that we may not be successful at this moment, but that we can be in the future, and that we can bring new things to the equation that will allow us to be better than we are right now. That that what our life seems like it is right now is not the extension of the entire world, because we sometimes when we get in trouble and we think, you know, this is the only life that is possible, this is the only dreams that are possible, these are the things that are limiting me, and we get in this little hole in our backyard and we think there is no way out of that hole. But the truth is that there are boundless and endless possibilities in the world, and we don't have any idea what those possibilities are. You know, teenagers who commit suicide do it because of the fact that they think that there was only one girl in life, you know, or there was only one moment that they could live and only one thing that they could do. But the truth is that we all have limitless possibilities. We all have limitless futures. We have so many lives that we could lead that would have meaning and significance in so many different ways if only we can just allow ourselves to open up the world and see the possibilities, take action to move toward those dreams, augment the meager selves we are at this moment with better and better things by doing better and better things and serving more and more people.
You sound very passionate about this. Is this experience that you have had? I mean, did you have to overcome something that had you just stuck?
We have to do that every day, you know. The challenges.
I'm looking for the big one, though.
I think, you know, every challenge and every day is a big one. This is not an easy
world.
We think that that life is supposed to be easy, but the truth is life is hard. You know, every single time I have a JV Alert Live event, it takes place on a weekend. And, you know, there's 52 weekends in the year. And out of all of the people that come to a JV Alert Live event, 10% of those people can't show up at the last second because of some major thing that went wrong in their life. You know, their spouse died, somebody had a heart attack, somebody ended up in the hospital. You know, something major happened that kept them from the event. That's 10% of all people. So if you multiply that out times the full year, how many different things are going to go? We think that a life is going to go on the way that it is right now, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. And the truth is that it never does. Change is the
right.
constant that is always with us. So we're going to have things over the next 6 months that are bad that are going to happen to us. If I wanted to be a fortune teller, I could tell you something wonderful will happen in your life, or I could tell you something bad will happen in your life, and both would be true, right,
mm-hmm.
over the next 6 months. The truth of our lives, the truth of the significance that we have is how we deal with those things that will come our way in the form of challenges or opportunities, because there will be so many opportunities and there will be so many challenges in our life that that each day we have to get up and we have to say, you know what? I've been on this earth for X number of years, however many years that is. And for me, that's a long time. And I've been on this road this far, and I've gotten this far, and there have been so many times before this that I thought, I'll never be able to get through the day. I'll never be able to pay my bills. I'll never be able to get past this challenge. I'll never be loved again. I'll never, you know, and the never, never, never word comes up over and over and over again. And yet here we are after all these
right.
many years, and we have survived to this point. And there is 100% chance, as far as we know at least, that we will someday not survive, you know.
Right.
But that's okay too, because when I was in the Army, I discovered, you know, I thought as I was going through basic training that I could not take the running. I could not get any further. I said, I'm going to die. And then
yeah.
and then I realized that if I really couldn't take it, you know, anymore, I'd probably just pass out or something like that,
right.
you know. And then I realized that we can go so much further than we think we can, that we can get through so much more than we possibly imagined that we could get through, and that what we need to do is we need to make our lives significant, because we all want to matter. We all want to make a difference. And here's the good news. The good news is that we all make a difference whether we want to or not. And it's the small things that count, you know, those kind words. I still remember the event where we asked the people at the event, you know, who is the person that had the biggest impact in your life, and what did they do to have that impact? And it was all kinds of people, a friend, a bum off the street that they never saw again, you know, a teacher. It could have been anybody. But the common thread was that person, what they had actually done to have the biggest impact was just a simple kind word at the right time, and we can all do that.
Right. And that is so true. I mean, I've had that happen to me. I've done it for other people without thinking about it, and then
yep.
realized, well, that was kind of fun. You know, I enjoyed that. So,
it is
surprise.
Fun. You know, if you want to have a good life, do good things for other people, because that's what makes us feel good. You know, that's what makes our life better. You know, even if you're
if
you're the most selfish person in the world, if you really want to feel good, go out and do things for other people, because it'll make you feel really good.
Yeah, it does. And you know, my role in my own life is, and this honestly is my own role in my own life, is to make every day 1% better than the day before.
Yeah.
I'm not striving for 50 or 100, 1% better. So every day I'm a little bit better, a little bit better educated,
yeah.
hopefully a little bit kinder, a little bit compassionate, and better than I was the day before. And I will do
yeah.
that till the day that I pass away in my sleep plotting world domination. That's just the way it is.
Well, just think of the percentages here, how much better you're going to be, you know. Jack
I know,
Canfield,
I'm going to be fabulous.
Yes, Jack Canfield famously in his book Success Principles talks about, you know, how they achieved the chicken soup for the soul success. And what
mm-hmm.
they did was they made a decision to actually do 5 things every day. Didn't matter whether it was big or small or whatever. They just did at least 5 things every day to make sure that they made chicken soup for the soul just as wonderful as possible. Maybe that was an interview. Maybe that was a press release. Maybe that was showing up at a live event. But 5 things every single day. And you know what? If you start multiplying that out, 5 things a day is a lot of things. You know, at the end of a year, 5 pages a day of writing is a lot of books. You know, so if we just resolve to do things and do them all the way to completion, you know, we all get up every day and we take action every day. You know, we breathe in and breathe out; otherwise, we're dead, right? But but we all take action. But what we need to do is we need to take action all the way to completion, hopefully massive action all the way to completion. And the way to do that is to break things down into small modules that will enable us to finish something. You know, so I can have 19 projects, but if I can finish 5 things on each project every day, I'd be doing great, you know. So it's just a one step at a time. That's the mantra that I say over and over and over again to myself as I meet obstacles and I say, I can't get through this. What I say is one step at a time, and let's move forward and do what we can do. Because, you know, there's a lot of luck in things. There's a lot of fortune. There's a lot of things that are in the way of our goals that we may not see and may show up unexpectedly. But if we are moving forward, doing everything that we can, if we're taking action all the way to completion, and if we're bringing real value to real people, then we're going to be more and more valuable, and we're going to be more significant, and we're going to make a difference in the world.
The universe does tend to send you what you need, doesn't it?
It does seem that way. Because eventually we focus. You know, if you don't eat for 3 days in a row, you get really focused on giving some food, you know.
That's right. That's right. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, too, because you're really well known for being transparent in everything you do. What do you mean by that? I mean, and you share a lot. I mean, you're very, very good about sharing an awful lot of information on your blog. You give away a tremendous amount of free information, but you're also very transparent. Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, I think, you know, it's a transparent world anyway right now. It's becoming more and more transparent.
Yep.
It's really hard to be somebody that you are not, because the truth comes out, right? I always told my daughters when they were growing up, you may not be able to catch somebody in a lie, but you always know who the liars are, even if they just stretch the truth, you know? Think about that for a moment. How many people do you know in your life? Can you think of somebody right now that you know always stretches the truth, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so if we are the people that we want to be, that's the way we want to show up, you know? That's the things that we want to do, because our lives are transparent, because we're already living in a world that is more transparent. You know, we as human beings have amazing truth detectors that we don't even know about. You know, the moving of a couple millimeters of flesh, you know, on our faces, our mind picks up the difference and says, that's not really quite what they mean. You know, the words are coming out of their mouth, but that's not what they mean. And we recognize that difference in an instant. And if we can recognize that in an instant, then we ought to know that we need to be congruent. We need to be the people that we are. You know, I still remember my brother who was younger than I, my younger brother, went off to the big corporate world, and I was trying to take a dip in that world, and I was out there trying to make myself bigger than I was, you know, because I felt, you know, like I had to be important. And the truth was, I had to be myself, because people would recognize me as myself anyway, eventually, right? The truth comes out. So if you're inexperienced at something, say you're inexperienced, you know? If you're selling multi-level marketing and that's your passion and you believe in the product, say, look, I want to sell you multi-level marketing, and I believe in this stuff, you know, because that's who you are and that's what you believe. Don't try and pussyfoot around who you are or what you believe, because the truth comes out.
It does. And there are studies now that, and again, I'm going to have to paraphrase, but basically a group of people were put in a room and they were shown photographs, half a second, I mean, just a fleeting second, of politicians' faces, and with unerring ability, they could predict who was going to win just by expressions on the faces.
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, and get an idea of the kind of signals that we can pick up on instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean we're always right, you know.
No.
Common sense isn't always right.
Are you sure?
Which is something ironic.
I have a lot of that.
Yeah, there are a lot of old wives' tales around there that have been spread around, because here's the way psychology works. The way psychology works is if it gets repeated enough, we believe it's true, right?
Right.
Even if we just say it to ourselves. So if we say we're a failure, we're a failure, we're a failure, then we believe that after a while, you know, that the constant repetition of that, you know, gets into our soul, eats away at us. And that doesn't mean that going around and saying that you're a success is going to instantaneously make you a success. But we'll believe we're a success anyway, whether we are or not. So actually doing the things that create real value is what creates real success, right? So if we can go out and do the things that we believe that we can do, because we have the faith to move ahead, because we know that all people are significant, because we know that we're unique and human beings are amazingly special, you know. If you don't believe people are special, you know, just go watch TED Talks or watch the Kennedy Center Honors or something like that, and see the lifetimes of people and how they've struggled. Read a good biography, and you'll be amazed at how much a person goes through and still, you know, creates tremendous value.
Did you happen to see on TED Talks the one by Amy Cuddy?
I don't know.
To go look for that one. Amy Cuddy. She basically talks about, you know, you can literally stand with your hands on your hips for just a couple of seconds, and I think somebody termed this the Wonder Woman stance, and it will literally change how you present yourself in the next few minutes.
Yeah.
Mentally, physically. It's an amazing and the story at the end, I'm not going to, you know, no spoiler
don't
alert
give
here,
point.
But no, her story at the end had me tearing up a bit. And I'm not, you know, a really teary kind of person. And I just went, oh, go Amy Cuddy, Cuddy. It's an astonishing TED Talk. So I think you'll enjoy it. Okay, yeah. I've got a question. I know you've got a big rock strategy in, you know, of course, my mind, you know where my mind went on that one. What is the big rock strategy?
Boy, I haven't thought of that one for a long time. I should look it up in my book. It's funny, you know, I actually keep a copy of my book on my desk, this book that I wrote called Impact,
like
How to
Me.
Get Noticed, Motivate Millions, and Make a Difference in a Noisy World. Here's the reason I keep it on my desk, because I have to keep reminding myself of the things that I should be doing. It's a really good book. You know, when I started writing it, I put a lot of thought and I put a lot of work and a lot of research into it, and it's a good book, but, you know, we forget those basics. So I think, you know, the big rock kind of strategy has to do with the fact that if we think about the big things that are coming down, the boulders that are coming down the mountain at us, and we worry about just taking care of those big things first and let the little things take care of themselves, we're going to be much better off. So if you can imagine a jar, a big jar, and we start filling it with rocks, and we have a whole pile of gravel and rocks and sand and everything else. If you were to, you know, just kind of randomly put that stuff into the jar, very shortly the jar would be full. But if you were to put the big rocks in first, and then you were to put in the next size rocks into it, and then eventually you fill it up with the sand, we can get so much more in our lives if we just, you know, worry about the things that are important first. So when you're taking a look at your life, you know, think about the value that you bring first. Think about what you want to be doing when you get up in the morning. And those are the big rocks of life that will make your life happy, right? That will make it worthwhile, that will make it something that you will be proud of when you get to the end of your life. And the little stuff doesn't matter so much. You know, we can fill up our lives with all kinds of details and other things that really don't make so much difference, but can fill our lives with even more if we concentrate on the important things first.
And that makes perfect sense. I mean, trying to dodge a boulder will, you know, impel you to action.
Yeah.
Stepping over a couple pebbles doesn't even really impinge on your consciousness, does it?
Yep. That's exactly
Interesting.
We can get worried about the peas in the bed. You know, there's the Princess and the Pea story. Remember that one from your fairy tale?
I do.
You know, we can get focused on that little tiny piece of gravel that is really not that important in our life, and yet it's eating up our entire reserve and making us entirely unhappy. That's where we can do things like forgive other people, or we can forget about the things that have happened if we just focus on the good things that are out there and available to us all the time.
Yeah, it's funny you should bring up that fairy tale, because I read all of the Grimm fairy tales when I was a very young child. My parents should have known better. But, you know, I would read them. I read everything. I was reading Guy de Maupassant before I was 7. I didn't understand a word of it, but, you know, I picked up a great vocabulary and spelling. But, I was reading just anything that they had on the bookshelves I was reading. But that was my favorite fairy tale. Yeah, I loved it. I just really loved it. But I have a quick question. But we're going back to, you know, kind of what you do in the morning when you wake up. You know, how are you going to, you know, what are you going to focus on?
Yeah.
When you get up in the morning, it's kind of a two-part question, I think. What are the first things that you do that allow you to focus on everything that you need to get done? And the second part of this question is, are you scheduled to within an inch of your life? I mean, you do so much. I mean, how are you doing all of this? So I need to know.
I hate schedules. So my goal in life is, you know, here's my idea of a vacation. I have to do nothing. and my wife's exactly the opposite. It's really funny because, you know, if we were to go on a vacation, she would want to plan every moment of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to prioritize things, you know, and I could be a lot better at productivity if I were to make sure that I compared every single thing in the funnel that was coming down the road to protect my time, to leverage my time, to have the focus to do everything that I want to do. But the truth is that we as human beings don't necessarily want to be that focused and organized all the time, you know? Sometimes we just like to relax and go this way and go that way and kind of move with the current, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's the best way to go, because we can get caught in pushing rocks uphill, you know, pushing boulders uphill, when it might be a lot more fun just to go to the top of the hill, see the big boulders at the top, and then just push them down, you know, down the hill. So if you can, the way that I start my day is I start my day by realizing that there are times in my day that I'm much more productive than other times. And for me personally, my best, most creative, productive hours are early in the morning, you know. Oftentimes, I don't have anybody forcing me out of bed in the morning, because I have the luxury of having an entrepreneurial lifestyle. I don't have any office hours that I have to meet. So I can lay in bed, and I think the most creative thoughts in that kind of semi-dream state between I'm sort of awake and I'm fully awake. And I can think of those kind of thoughts. And then if I go downstairs and I work on the things that are most important or most creative early on, then later in the day, when I don't have as much energy, when I don't have as much focus, I can do those things that I could do in my sleep, you know, the things that are repetitive tasks that we all have that maybe require less of our creativity and more of our hard work, you know. So that's kind of how I do mine. But my dream schedule is You know, there's a difference in the way that millionaires think. I'll just use this analogy, you know, and everything's not about the money, but the same thing holds true for productivity. Most of us spend our time thinking of how we can do something or how can we learn about something and how can we execute that. When other people who are more effective ask the question of, you know, what resources can I use to delegate this, or who can I get to do this, or who's going to be the best person to do this? And they're basically removing the action from themselves, because we all have the same 24 hours in the day, right? So the question is, who can I delegate this to? Who can I partner with? Who can I work with that would make this time much more leveraged and efficient? And if we're asking those kinds of questions, we're going to get much higher results than if we're going to sit there and we're going to think, well, I have to figure it out. I have to know how to do it. Well, guess what? Maybe you don't.
Exactly. And that's why my VA practice is so successful, because I can pick up the slack for people who should not be doing a lot of the work that we're doing, you know, my team is doing. But here's the thing. How do you move people from going, I need to do it all myself, to outsource? Look, I have a team. You would not believe how long it took myself into talking myself into having a team. I was like, I can do it. And to this day, I struggle with it. I never ask my team to do something that I can't personally do. And I'll make this, and it's a rabbit hole. I do it every day, Ken. It's like, okay, I can hand this off to Julia, or I can hand this off to Ben, or I can hand this out to whoever. Oh, shoot, I'll just do it myself. It'll take me 10 minutes. And an hour later,
exactly.
I'm like, really? Really, Denise? And then I have the little head
slap. It's going to just take you 10 minutes over and over and over again. So that's a real question, because it is always harder, you know, first, you know, to delegate to a team, because number one, you have to figure out what you want them to do, you know.
Right.
Well, what can I get them to do? What are they capable of doing, you know? And then you have to train them to do it. So you have to teach them, and you have to hope that they're going to make good decisions and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the truth is, I mean, I'll just give you an example from Davin Michaels, who started his business in the Philippines with one employee, and this has to do with outsourcing.
He's got a huge VA firm now.
Yeah, he has a huge VA firm now. But it started with one VA, and what he did was he went in and he taught that VA everything that he knew, and then he had that person train the next person, and that person train the next person. So basically he trained one person and just let it go. Now, does it take longer? Yes. Will they do the job as well as you do? Well, certainly not at the first, unless you're incredibly lucky and you get somebody that's more talented than you are. And sometimes that happens, you know.
Not often enough.
I definitely, you know, need to surround myself with people who are detail-oriented, because I love creating things and putting out the broad vision, but I really don't want to maintain it, you know? I don't want to sit there and repair the roof. I don't want to do the plumbing. I just want to say I want a bathroom here, you know, that kind of a situation. So, you know, determine what your skills are. If you're a detail-oriented person who can take a list and just check it off, you know, you're a wonderful, wonderful asset to somebody. And that's, you know, another good reason that God created all kinds of people, you know, that we don't all like to be up on the stage, or we don't all like to think up new ideas, that some of us just would like to go into work and just have people leave us alone and just go through the checklist, you know. So.
Right. You know what? I need to ask you back. I got nowhere near. I had this massive list of questions for you. And we didn't get anywhere near through. I got partway through it. Would you please come back?
Oh, I'd love to come back. You are such a great interviewer, and it's always a pleasure, you know, to be able to talk to people like you. You've got a great mind and a warm heart. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I am, when you said yes, you should see me, Ken. I was doing my happy dance. I was like, woohoo! I picked up the cat and was dancing. I'm not
well,
kidding.
Well, I
this
hope
is a true story.
I lived up to expectations.
Absolutely. And like I said, I've been reading you for a long time. I've been following you around for a long time. I love your transparency. I love that you offer so much that is, you know, you're not trying to just say, come into my programs. And I mean, you really are a tremendous resource for anybody who wants to have any kind of a business online. So I'm genuinely pleased to have you here today. I'm so excited, and I thank you very much. But
thank
definitely
you.
Want you to come back.
We'll make it happen then.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for being here today, everybody. The show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Ken MacArthur. Ken, tell people one more time where they can find you. I know you've got several places, and you have a podcast that I want people to go to.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You can find information on me at kenmacarthur.com. That's K-E-N-M-C-A-R-T-H-U-R, kenmacarthur.com. Or you can just do a search on Ken MacArthur on Google. For my podcast, just you can go to kenmacarthur.com/iTunes, and that'll take you direct to the iTunes page, and you can subscribe to my podcast. Would love to have you on that.
No, I'm on it. Trust
All
me,
right,
I'm on
fantastic.
It. Again, Ken, thank you so much, and everybody have a great weekend, and I will see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthewebcom or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.